The Caribbean was never meant to be whole. Not on paper. Not in the ledgers of empire. Long before flags were raised or anthems written, lines were already cutting through our future. Lines drawn in rooms thousands of miles away. Lines that ignored language, kinship, trade, and memory. Lines that turned neighbors into foreigners and shared history into separate files. We are taught to see nations as natural, islands with names, borders with meaning, but those borders were manufactured, built for control, designed to simplify extraction and silence resistance. What looks like geography is policy. What feels permanent began as convenience. This episode asks a hard question. Not who we are, but who decided what we would become. When freedom finally arrived, it did not arrive on clean ground. It arrived trapped inside boundaries we did not choose. And once those borders hardened, fragmentation stopped being an accident. It became the system. This is not a story about maps. It is a story about consequence. Chapter 1. Lines Drawn Without Us. The Caribbean enters the 1800s already broken, but not yet divided on paper. Plantations are faltering. Sugar prices slide. Empires begin to see the region not as a future, but as a problem to be managed cheaply. Control replaces ambition. Administration replaces settlement. What matters now is efficiency. European powers stop thinking about islands as places where people live. They think of them as units, assets, columns in ledgers, a harbor here, a labor pool there. Borders are no longer about geography. They are about convenience. These decisions are not made in the Caribbean. They are made in London, Paris, Madrid, and The Hague. In offices with maps spread across tables, in rooms where no Caribbean voice is present, no African descendant, no indigenous survivor, no free black farmer, no dock worker, no market woman. The people who live on the land are not consulted because they are not considered relevant. Treaties move islands between empires like furniture. One war ends, another begins. Territories are exchanged to settle debts or secure trade routes. An island that spoke one language on Monday wakes up under a new flag on Tuesday. The law changes, the church changes, the school books change, the people remain. These borders are not drawn to reflect culture. They cut directly through it. African traditions that traveled across water are suddenly split by law. Family networks that span islands are interrupted by new rules. Trade routes used for generations are reclassified as foreign crossings. What was once local becomes illegal without warning. Spain, Britain, France, and the Netherlands do not coordinate to preserve Caribbean life. They compete to dominate it. Each empire imposes its own legal system, different definitions of race, different rules of property, different paths to freedom or continued bondage. The same African ancestry now exists under incompatible laws. Religion becomes a border. Catholic on one island, Protestant on the next. Conversion is not spiritual, it is administrative. Churches enforce loyalty. Language becomes a marker of belonging or exclusion. Children are punished for speaking Creole. History is rewritten to center empire and erase survival. No Caribbean population is asked how they define themselves. Identity is assigned from above. Islands are grouped or separated based on shipping lanes, not kinship. Some are ruled directly. Others are lumped together under governors who never set foot on most of the land they oversee. The plantation may be declining, but control is tightening. Freed people are watched closely. Laws are passed to restrict movement. Vagrancy rules criminalize survival. Borders make enforcement easier. An island boundary becomes a tool. It limits where people can flee. It limits where labor can organize. Indigenous presence is barely acknowledged. What remains of it is ignored. These lands are treated as empty, even when they are not. Empty of voices that matter. Empty of claims worth honoring. The myth of vacancy justifies everything that follows. The Caribbean is not seen as a region with shared destiny. It is seen as fragments to be optimized. A port here does not need to cooperate with a port there. In fact, cooperation is discouraged. Division prevents unified resistance. Fragmentation ensures dependency. Even geography is manipulated. Natural proximity means nothing. Two islands visible from each other may belong to rival empires. Crossing that short distance requires permission. Paper replaces water as the barrier. Borders turn the sea from connector into obstacle. Education reinforces this division. Colonial schools teach children to identify with empire. British subjects, French citizens, Dutch possessions, Spanish colonies, Caribbean identity is absent, shared history is not taught, resistance is minimized or erased, survival is reframed as compliance. The people understand something is wrong, even if they do not yet have language for it. They feel the fracture in daily life, in trade, in marriage, in worship, in movement. They experience borders not as lines on a map, but as interruptions in living memory. Still, there is no mechanism to challenge these decisions. The power imbalance is total. Empire speaks, the Caribbean listens, or is forced to. Silence becomes policy. By the mid-1800s, these borders begin to harden. What was once flexible becomes fixed. Laws reference boundaries. Courts enforce them. Ships are registered by colony. People are categorized by place of birth rather than cultural belonging. What looks stable is actually brittle. These borders do not reflect reality, so they must be constantly enforced. Punishment becomes routine. Surveillance expands. Difference is exaggerated. Unity becomes suspect. The Caribbean did not choose this shape. It inherited it, and every future struggle will take place inside it. The lines are drawn, but the damage has only begun. Chapter 2. Administration becomes identity. By the late 1800s, the borders no longer feel temporary. What began as imperial convenience settles into daily routine. Offices are built, records are kept, rules are enforced. Administration moves from the background to the center of Caribbean life. Control is no longer just imposed, it is managed. Colonial governments begin consolidating islands into administrative units. Not because they belong together, but because it is cheaper to rule them that way. A governor may oversee several islands without understanding any of them. Decisions are made by report, not by presence. Distance becomes policy. These artificial groupings ignore culture and history. Islands with different languages, faiths, and customs are forced into single bureaucratic systems. Others that share ancestry and trade are split apart. Efficiency replaces coherence. Paper replaces people. Movement changes first. Travel between neighboring islands now requires permission, passes, stamps, approvals. A fisherman who once crossed waters freely now risks arrest. A trader must explain himself to clerks who do not know his name or his family. The sea becomes regulated space. Borders turn neighbors into foreigners. The shift is subtle but constant. Small delays become barriers. Questions become suspicions. Identity begins to hinge on documentation rather than belonging. Who you are matters less than where the empire says you belong. Education deepens the divide. Schools do not teach Caribbean history. They teach empire. Children learn the names of distant kings and queens. They memorize foreign wars. They recite loyalty to flags they will never see raised in their own interest. The Caribbean is described as a possession, not a homeland. Local languages are discouraged or punished. Creole is labeled improper. African retentions are dismissed as backward. Indigenous memory is nearly erased. Standard European language becomes the path to survival. To advance, one must distance oneself from the region itself. Legal systems reinforce separation. British law here, French code there, Dutch administration elsewhere. The same act may be legal on one island and criminal on another. Justice becomes inconsistent. Confusion benefits authority. Division limits collective response. Racial hierarchy is standardized across these systems. Whiteness is associated with order and legitimacy. Blackness is framed as labor, threat, or problem to be managed. Mixed populations are sorted into categories that serve taxation and control. These classifications are written into law, not debated. Economics follows the borders. Trade is encouraged with the metropole, not with neighboring islands. Sugar may ship to Europe, while nearby islands import food from far away. Inter-island cooperation is neglected. Dependency is designed. This fragmentation weakens labor movements. Organizing across borders becomes difficult. Laws differ. Authorities do not cooperate unless it serves repression. A strike on one island does not easily spread to another. Solidarity must fight paperwork before it can fight power. Religion also becomes administrative. Churches align with empire. Clergy are trained to reinforce obedience. Faith is permitted as long as it does not challenge structure. Spiritual unity does not translate into political unity. The pulpit rarely questions the border. By the turn of the 1900s, people begin to internalize these divisions. They identify by colony first: British West Indian, French Antillean, Dutch subject, Spanish Caribbean becomes a geographic term, not a shared identity. This is not accidental. It is cultivated. Social distance grows. Stereotypes form. One island is labeled lazy, another dangerous, another backward. These judgments mirror imperial thinking and are encouraged by separation. When people do not know each other, myth replaces memory. Colonial administrations present themselves as neutral managers. They claim order, stability, progress. But their systems are built on exclusion. No Caribbean-wide representation exists. No shared decision-making body. Each island is encouraged to look inward and upward, never sideways. The idea of unity becomes abstract. People may feel it emotionally, but not politically. There is no structure to support it. No institution designed for collective Caribbean interest. Administration has replaced imagination. Even resistance is shaped by this framework. Grievances are local. Appeals are sent to colonial offices. Solutions are negotiated island by island. The system trains people to fight small battles inside larger cages. By the time conversations about freedom begin to surface, the fragmentation feels normal. Borders are accepted facts. Differences are assumed natural. Few remember that these divisions were constructed. Fewer still are allowed to challenge them. The Caribbean has not just been divided. It has been taught to stay divided. By the time freedom is discussed, division already feels normal. Chapter 3. Independence without unity. When independence finally arrives across the Caribbean in the 1900s, it does not arrive as a blank slate. It arrives inside borders already hardened by more than a century of colonial administration. Flags change, anthems are written, but the map remains almost untouched. The lines drawn without consent are inherited without debate. New leaders step into systems never designed for self-rule. Colonial governments were built to extract, not to develop, to divide, not to coordinate. Independence transfers control of these systems, but it does not dismantle them. The machinery stays intact. Each island is treated as a separate national project. Constitutions mirror colonial frameworks. Legal codes remain largely unchanged. Civil services are staffed by people trained to maintain order, not to imagine alternatives. The question is no longer who drew the borders, but how to govern inside them. The problem becomes clear quickly. These new nations are small. Some are tiny, limited land, limited resources, limited bargaining power. Colonial borders that once served empire now limit sovereignty. Independence exposes the weakness built into the design. Attempts at regional unity emerge almost immediately. The idea is practical, not romantic. Shared defense, shared markets, shared voice on the global stage. But mistrust runs deep. Different colonial experiences have produced different political cultures, different expectations, different fears. Some territories fear domination by larger islands. Others fear losing hard-won autonomy. Colonial administrators had encouraged rivalry for generations. Now those habits surface during negotiations. Unity feels risky. Fragmentation feels familiar. Economic inequality between islands complicates everything. Some inherit stronger infrastructure. Others inherit debt and underdevelopment. Cooperation requires sacrifice, and sacrifice is difficult when survival feels uncertain. The systems reward competition, not coordination. External powers take advantage of this division. Former empires maintain influence through trade, aid, and diplomacy. New powers enter with strategic interests. Each island negotiates alone. Fragmentation weakens leverage. What could be collective strength becomes isolated bargaining. Borders harden further as independence solidifies them. Passports replace passes. Customs replaces checkpoints. Citizenship becomes exclusive. The Caribbean Sea remains shared, but political access narrows. Neighbors now require visas. Movement is formalized and restricted. Cultural connection persists despite political division. Music travels, food travels, language overlaps, family networks remain cross-border. But these ties exist in spite of the state, not because of it. Governments rarely build policy around cultural reality. National identity becomes a survival strategy. Flags matter. Sports teams matter. Symbols provide cohesion within borders that feel fragile. But this inward focus also deepens separation. Pride becomes protection. Comparison becomes rivalry. Education reinforces this shift. National histories are emphasized. Regional history is compressed or omitted. Children learn their island story first and sometimes only. Shared Caribbean struggle becomes background noise. Fragmentation is taught as destiny rather than design. Economic development follows the same pattern. Tourism is marketed competitively. Each island sells itself as unique, separate, superior. Cooperation is discussed, but branding rewards isolation. The global market does not see a region, it sees destinations. Political crises reveal the cost. When one island faces economic collapse or environmental disaster, support is limited. Coordination is slow. Borders delay response. What should be collective defense becomes fragmented reaction. The legacy of colonial borders shows itself most clearly in moments of vulnerability. Debt negotiations, trade disputes, climate threats. Each nation stands alone, negotiating terms shaped by systems that once extracted from all of them together. This is not failure of leadership alone, it is inherited constraint. Independence did not include the freedom to redraw the map. Challenging borders risked instability, so they were preserved. Safety was chosen over structural change. Yet the cost remains. Fragmentation limits imagination. It narrows what feels possible. Regional unity becomes a slogan rather than a structure. The Caribbean speaks in many voices when one might carry further. The tragedy is quiet but persistent. A region bound by shared history, shared trauma, and shared resilience operates as disconnected states. Colonial borders outlive colonial rule. They become normalized, defended, even celebrated. But beneath the flags and formalities, the fracture remains visible. In migration patterns, in economic dependence, in political vulnerability, independence did not erase the lines, it made them permanent. The empires leave, but the borders stay, and so does the fracture.